Good morning. Today I want to talk to you about the Magi that came. First of all, the question you may want to ask is, what is a Magi? Magi were likely the royal stargazers and scholars of wisdom to the king. What king? We really don't know. We don't know exactly where they even came from. We know a general direction. They saw a star in the east. And they came from the west. They were highly respected in their own countries, people of wealth and prestige, the kind of men that people not only wanted to pay attention to, but would love to listen to. And so looking at these men brings with it some importance. Some influential leading people doing this brings a lot of credibility and a lot of notice to people. We read in verse 2, it says, they saw his star. We saw his star in the east and have come to worship him. Very applicable today here is, we need to see Jesus' star. There's evidence in our world today that there is a creator. I hear story after story, though, of people saying, God's never done anything for me. God's never shown me that he is there, that there's proof of him. But yet we have these pagan stargazers watching coming from miles away. No Sunday school, no church, no youth group, no church camp. And yet they see that there is evidence of God. They just looked up to the stars to find the evidence of God. We also get that statement from Romans chapter 1, verse 20. God reveals himself through nature. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that men are without excuse. Once they saw the star, they didn't stray away. They followed the star we see. They could have ignored it, like many people in today's world do, of ignoring the evidence they see that Jesus is real. But they didn't. There's a biography I read about some music sensation. Honestly, if I could remember the name, I'd tell you, but the biography simply says that she had been a born-again Christian for 3 years in high school, but had stopped attending since then. And when asked why she stopped going, she said, the church was just judging me on the clothes I wore and the views that I had. If the church wasn't so judgmental, maybe it would be for me. You see, the celebrity saw the star 3 years ago. For a time, she saw the star. But that was it. Like Jesus' parable, the sower, Matthew 13, the celebrity was a seed planted among the thorns. And the cares of this world, though they may be good cares of caring for people, choked the word out. This sensation saw the star for a time, but ignored it. Do you see the difference here? People see the star, the indicators that there is a God, but want to make him fit their lives instead of their lives fit him. But remember the Magi, though. They did follow. Verse 1 says, the Magi came from the east to Jerusalem. The Magi followed the star. They didn't know where the star went. Who goes on a trip when they don't know the end destination, really? Imagine it this way. A family is willing to go rent a 12-passenger van fully loaded and take three dogs along with them, heading across country. And they will arrive safely, in part because they know where they're going. But not these guys. They don't have a clue where they're going. They just followed the star. They didn't know how much money they would need, how much food they would need, how much clothes they would need, nothing. They followed the star with this reckless abandon. They didn't even know God for the most part. We don't know what they knew. We don't even know if they were Jewish or not. What is our excuse as to why we don't follow the star? Maybe just people in general, why we don't follow? What's our excuse? They rearranged their lives. Did their work stop them? No. Did school stop them? No. Did popularity of that's not the good thing to do stop them? No. Popular opinion in our age is life is about fashion, drugs, style, and cars, right? Life should be about me and what I want. What I desire, but not these Magi. They gave up their fortune for the chance to get to know the king. How committed are you? These men traveled many miles for one night with the Savior. How far are you willing to go with him, those who have him in their life? How committed are you to what you believe? We read in verse 2 about finding the star, and it says that they asked, "Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews?" Now, we get they were following the star. We know that it is Jesus' star, and this is kind of where it gets an application of following Jesus. We flip the meaning. The real star of the story is Jesus. And notice, finding a clear picture of Jesus is not always easy. They had to stop and ask for directions about where Jesus should be. They ask Herod. It makes sense that the Magi will go to Jerusalem and ask Herod where to go. Notice also they're not too proud to ask for directions too. Maybe there's some wisdom in that. But who do you ask? Who are you willing to ask for directions? For me, there's always been someone who has helped me with questions I've had. My dad started with that, my father-in-law, my Bible professors, I can still call them up and they answer the questions I have. But do you have someone? Each and every one of us needs to have someone that is kind of that upline, someone that we will call and ask questions that we have, honestly seeking. And it's kind of laid on us to seek to find people who can help us find where we need to go. So who do you have? There once was a boy who heard about a paper airplane contest at his local library. And to win, you simply had to get the airplane to fly the farthest. No additions, just a standard piece of copying paper. So he went home and started creating, and as you can guess, he didn't have much success at first. He asked his dad for a few ideas, and his dad said he had a few, but mainly he learned them from this book, and he gave the book to his son. It was called Book of Airplanes, go figure, right? So he took it and cracked it open. There were planes that did flips, spins, did cyclones as they flew down. But he found one that was made for distance, and it came with instructions saying the most important thing for the longest distance is to travel in a straight line. And to have a straight line, the folds need to be neat and exact. So he went to work on making planes many times over, trying to get it just right. So he worked and worked, and on the day that the race came, he had no worries because he knew he had done it right. He had tested it, he had done his research. There's a lot of parallels here with that. You need to lean on people who have been there, who can guide you in the right way, give you guidelines of where to go to find your answers. Hopefully they lead you to read the right book, right? The key is to be on the path of seeking to follow Christ, right? And to not lose sight of that. People looking to God, there's going to be mistakes, no doubt. The NCAA Cross Country Championship, Riverside, California, was a championship being held on a 10,000-meter course. However, there was a problem. Of the 128 runners, 123 of them took the wrong path. One of the runners who had the right path, Mike Del Cavo, was waving to his national competitors saying, "This is the right way." And they just laughed at him as they continued to go the wrong way. Del Cavo said, "They thought it was funny that I was on the right way." And there's some application to us there. Many people are on the wrong path. Many people laugh at us for being on the right path. And we also are supposed to be waving to people trying to get them to get on the right path. And sometimes you may be the person who takes the wrong path, gets off the correct course, really. We will make mistakes. We are human. We will make mistakes. But if you're listening to the voice, if you're seeking to follow the star, you'll be willing to hear the voice of God, the voice of the correct path. So we need to refuse distractions so we can stay focused on the star. When you make up your mind to follow the King of Kings and Lord of Lords, there will be distractions that come your way, trying to make you take your mind off of God. There will be someone or something that seeks to distract you. And for this story, it's Herod, really. Herod and his goals were a bit that way. He wasn't really interested in worshiping the Christ. He was simply trying to learn where the child was. And Herod is kind of that distraction example for us in our lives. There will be many Herods in your life seeking to distract you from following God, distract you from following the star. So maybe the question is, who are the Herods in your life? What's stopping you from being what God created you to be? Your failures, your self-centeredness, maybe your financial debt, maybe your successes even take your mind off of God. Herod will use any distractions to stop you from pursuing God. So what's holding you back from your relationship with God? Distractions aren't always something that's bad. Herod was just asking the Magi to do what they were already doing, pursuing Christ and then to report back to them. That's the way that distractions happen. It's just a slight change oftentimes, taking you just a slight bit off of course. Jim Collins, in his book, From Good to Great, says strategic leaders accomplish great things by saying no to good ideas. There's a lot of good things that can sidetrack us in life, but they do sidetrack us from God. We've got to be careful about not doing that. We've got to say no to the good to say yes to the God things, the great things that he wants us to do. So again, who are the Herods in your life? As long as they stayed focused on the star, the Magi didn't have time to complain about the long, hot, difficult journey. And as long as we stay focused on the star, we don't have time to be distracted by the Herods in our life. As long as we stay focused on the star, we can stay focused on being in God's will. And I kind of hate this truth, but I got to tell it to you. It's a reminder of how easily we can lose our focus. When I was working in Ohio, we came across this restaurant with a very interesting name, the Church of God Grill. It's a very peculiar name, arousing curiosity. How did they get this name, really, right? One man's answer was, it started as a church. Started with they had a meal after every service on Sunday of chicken, you know, the typical meal for the church after services. And people started coming just for the meal. They'd come after the services just for the meal. And eventually the church ceased to be able to have services because no one was coming for that. They just simply came for the meal. And eventually the church just became a business. Whatever we focus on, we begin to prioritize. If we're not careful, like the Church of God Grill, our focus can lead us to pursuits that are not following God. Take our focus off of pursuing God. Every follower of Jesus needs that North Star strategy of focus on God. It is important that we do that. So what is your North Star strategy? What keeps you focused on Jesus? What keeps you on target? God wants to do great things with your life, but that starts with remaining focused regardless of the difficulties, the distractions that come your way. When was the last time you gave God your complete focus? When was the last time you put all your distractions at the door and left them there and gave God your full attention? Karen Barber tells the story of her son, Chris, who decided to go to college in California. He finished his finals, concluded his part-time job, and went to the airport. Well, there was a bad snowstorm, so there was delays. Finally, when he finally got to his parents' Christmas Eve at 7:30 at night, he says, "Mom, I need your car." And she says, "Son, why are you going to go out now? All the stores have been open late the past couple weeks, but tonight the newspaper said every mall is closing at 6. He says, "Mom, I've been sitting around for hours. I have a plan. I need your keys." So he takes the car and goes out. Comes back an hour later with sacks of gifts. Goes into his room and wraps the presents. The next morning, they unwrapped all the presents. For his brother, who loves going to the movies, he gave him a gift card. For his dad, who loves Chinese food, he gave him a gift card. For his mom, he had a box. A very long box, very thin. And he gives it to her and says, "Oh, Mom, I know what you needed." And she opens the box and it's new windshield wiper blades. He says, "When I drove your car at Thanksgiving, I saw they weren't cleaning your windshield. And now that there's rain, sleet, and snow, you definitely need new blades." And she said that they were all thrilled because of their gifts, but that wasn't the main reason why they were thrilled. It was his eyes that were the most thrilling part. He was so excited that he had gifts to give. When was the last time you were excited about the gifts that you gave God? When was the last time you gave your best to the one who loved you so much that he was willing to give his son for you? But we talk about the Magi talking with Herod. They went on their way. They continued to follow the star until it stopped over the place where Jesus was. I don't know how all this happened. I would love to have seen it. When they found him, they were awestruck, excited. When they got to the house, they saw the child and his mother, and they bowed down to worship him. Verses 2 through 9 is where we get to. This is probably my most favorite part of this lesson today, of learning this myself. Sitting there on his mother's lap was God in human flesh. And maybe this is what the Magi were thinking. We've gone through all these different false religions and meaningless offerings, but had found that now they had found the true object of worship. One of my companions ran to his saddlebag and brought back a purse of gold, a treasure fit for a king. My friend had always hoarded his money, and he had become very well rich because of that, but now he was so excited because Jesus had outweighed his money in this instance here. Jesus was more important. My other companion also came bearing a gift, frankincense it was. He had always used it in our worship to our gods, burning it in sacrifice to our idols, but now he gives it in worship to the one true God. No longer would he or any of us serve these false gods. We have seen God face to face. And my gift, though, was the most confusing of all. It's taken me 30 years to understand why I gave it. I had in my saddlebag a container of myrrh. I almost overlooked it, really. But I felt compelled that this was to be my gift. Why? I wasn't really sure myself when I gave it. Myrrh is a spice for embalming, a gift for the dead, not the living. I would come to learn that this baby in Bethlehem was born to die on a cross. Even as an infant, he was being prepared for death. This baby would die for me one day. The funny thing about these gifts, they had an interesting usage. And Matthew kind of points out why. Gold was a gift given for a king. Who has the gold? The kings do, because they collect taxes. The gold was sent to the treasury of the kings. It wasn't just a good gift. It was a gift fit for a king. Frankincense, a gift given to a priest. It was the sweet-smelling aroma the priest did during worship. The high priest was historically the only mediator between us and God, and he used incense. Christ we hold as our king. Christ we hold as our high priest. These are two gifts that were given to him. And myrrh was a gift given for a sacrifice. What is myrrh? It was an embalming ointment used for funerals and cremations. But that was its purpose. And I think Matthew put those in his letter to show those things about Jesus. That Jesus is our king, Jesus is our high priest, and Jesus is our sacrifice put in our place. So what are you willing to give as a gift to Jesus? What things are you not willing to give? What obstacles still hold sway over your life that block your way to Jesus? Lastly, the text says they went back a different way. And I know, of course, that they went back a different way because after talking to Herod, they knew he was a bad guy. They don't want to go back to him. But I believe that there's some implication here as well. When people experience Jesus, he puts them on a different path. He puts them on a new road. A new life. And I think that these Magi went home, they were changed too. And as we also should be changed. They found and we should find new life when we follow Jesus. That's what happens when you passionately pursue a relationship with Jesus. You leave a different person. Evelyn wrote about her 50th birthday. She says, "Don't you hate those birthdays that end with a zero for some odd reason? Those are the toughest ones. My friend Betty invited me over for a dinner party from her birthday, and that made me feel a little bit better. As I was on my way to there, I saw some young girls jump roping, and they were singing the same rhymes that I sang 40 years ago. I wanted to be 8 again, not 50. When I shared with my dinner companion that I didn't want to be 50 again, but I wanted to be 8, everyone around the room shared how old they were, and staunchly enough, everyone was older than me. My friend Betty said she was 85. I didn't know that. She said, "You know, people always called me a tomboy when I was growing up because I loved to climb trees and I loved to climb hills because I loved to see a little bit farther than I could before. I knew if I could see just a little bit farther, there was something better on the horizon. And at 85, in my heart, I still climb hills and trees, to see a little bit farther, to see something a little bit more beautiful. That's what the Magi did, and that's what we're called to do, is to see, to look to the future. Years ago at the post office, a man who had been sorrowful from the loss of his son was put in the responsibility of the dead letter man, the person who was responsible for letters that they could not decide what the address was that they had to go to. And at Christmas time, there fell into his hands a letter addressed to Santa Claus, because, you know, little kids don't know the right address for Santa. To his surprise, he noticed the letter had actually come from his own daughter. And it said, "Dear Santa, we are very sad at our house this year, and I don't want you to bring me anything. My little brother went to heaven last spring, and all I want for you to do is, when you come to my house, take his toys to him. I'll leave them in the corner by the kitchen stove, his hobble horse and train and everything. I know he'll be lost in heaven without them. Most of all, his horse, because he likes riding it so much. You must take them to him, please. And you don't have to bring anything for me. But if you could, my dad would really need something. Could you make him like he used to be, where he would tell me stories before bedtime? I wish you would. I heard him say to Mommy once that eternity was the only cure for him, so could you bring him a little bit of that too? And I will be your little good girl, Marion Bennett." Jesus is that. We read in the story before, we're supposed to be looking towards eternity, seeking beyond the horizon, right? And also, Jesus is able to bring us that little bit of eternity, right? Because Jesus is eternity. And regardless of any gift the Magi brought, the one received is greater than anything possibly imagined. Jesus gives us that eternity. So I ask you today, have you turned to Jesus? Do you need to turn to Jesus? During this next song is an opportune time to ask for prayers. If you have any need for the church to pray for you, for the church to help you, if you need to be baptized for the first time giving your life to Jesus, please come tell me during this next song as we stand and sing.